Mars 2060 is a podcast designed to be listened to in chronological order. If you're just joining us now, please go back and start with episode one.
This is Jenna from the rec room of Colony One, speaking with Katya Flores, one of the recorders on the excavation. Katya talks about her role at the dig site and the discovery she made. Being a perfectionist must be one of the qualifications for your position.
Well, guilty. Once the site is disturbed, once we start working, it's impossible for the site to ever be restored to its previous condition. So it's imperative I record everything from the variations in soil and rock to where things are found in relation to each other.
Why is that?
Oh, they can offer clues to whether what we are looking at formed naturally or by intelligent life and how long it's been around. I may not have the most glamorous job. I mean, no one made a movie about the recorder of a dig. But without my work, many findings would just go unnoticed.
Has that happened on this job?
A couple months after we started the excavation, my team, we working team, I'm not the only recorder. My team found that some of the rocks seem to have cutouts in them.
What do you mean?
Well, one of the ends of the wall had shapes cut into it. Some were triangular, others were more square, and we had no idea what he meant. But I wrote it all down and we moved on. When we got down further, we ran into rock below our feet, solid rock. We couldn't continue digging straight down. We had to move over to the right, to where there was soil again. I documented all this information. That night, I was reading over my reports and I was reminded of those cutouts in the rocks further up. I had this theory that they were for connecting the next segment of the wall. Kinda like the way Legos fit together. The next day, we brought out our scanning equipment to see how far the rock stretched on the other side. And sure enough, it was only about half a meter wide. Only time will tell, but there's a possibility that this wall was being built before whatever happened happened.
How's the progress going?
We are working hard. Progress can feel so slow to outside eyes. In the age of expecting everything to happen faster than the blink of an eye, this work can feel like we are back in Stone Age, or at least in the early 2000s.
So I saw some of the diagrams from the dig, and it looks like you spent a lot of time on that initial wall.
Yes, our equipment had detected the formation being substantial, stretching fairly deep and wide. What's unbelievable is not only how much larger these rocks got the lower we went, but how intricately they fit together. The rock's extremely hard. Cutting into it is nearly impossible unless you have very advanced tools. There's no mortar holding them together, yet you couldn't slide a sheet of paper between them.
How heavy are the rocks?
Well, we're still trying to get to the bottom of the largest one we've uncovered so far, but I would guess some around 150 tons. That's how much it would weigh on Earth, anyhow. On Mars, it's lighter. It's around 65 tons.
That would take quite a lot of strength. I was going to say manpower, but I doubt it was humans doing the lifting.
You would be very doubtful.
Do you know how long it's been buried?
You know, that's part of what we're trying to figure out. It's very possible it could have been underground for millions and millions of years. For a while, after everyone got sick, I thought we might not get to keep looking. All the work and everything we gave up to come here, and I thought it was all over. Thank goodness the site's open again, and I can continue recording every detail. You never know what connects the dots until you lay them all out.
Mars This is Jenna speaking with William Marshall from the greenhouse of Colony One. He's the chief botanist. William's an expert in hydroponics. I hear they call you Farmer Bill.
Yeah. It's a nickname I got on the ship, and it seems to have stuck.
Why on the ship?
Well, we actually started farming on the flight. We weren't growing much food. It was just more to keep our spirits lifted by enjoying a radish or two during the journey. Nothing beats fresh, does it?
That is for sure.
Yeah. When we arrived on Mars, we continued setting up the greenhouses that the robots had started before us.
And what are they made of?
The domes are made of inflatable UV-resistant plastic. And then inside, the hydroponic system feeds the plants with a nutrient-rich solution that runs in cycles. We can grow a pretty large variety of produce. Spinach, tomatoes, peppers. We even grow strawberries.
Oh. Did you always plan to grow hydroponically?
Our end goal was to grow in soil, but that takes time. The great thing about hydroponics is that it uses less water and it yields a hardier crop.
No kidding.
Yeah, so it's good for us, obviously, since water's so scarce here. And we recycle everything. What you're drinking right now was once used to shower, was once used to brush your teeth, was once...
Urine.
That's right. Mm. Yeah. I mean, luckily we have a great filtering system.
Yes.
Yeah. Of course, our plants still needed sunlight, and with the dust storms that we got, we couldn't depend on the sun. So we also had grow lights.
Okay. That makes sense. I hear those dust storms can be pretty intense.
Oh. Yeah, we had a particularly long storm a few months after we arrived, and the lights weren't working correctly. And I tried everything I could to save them, but I ended up losing the whole crop. And I couldn't help but feel responsible. And I started wondering what I was trying to save, you know? A lot of the crew were inspired to come here because of the rock formation discovery, but not me. Frankly, I still needed more proof of intelligent life having a hand in it. I came because I've been fighting for conservation my whole career, and I came all the way to Mars because we damaged Earth so severely. But what were we doing? Making it habitable so people can do the same thing here? Things stopped making sense to me. I was angry.
At what?
Everything. Angry at my idealism. Angry that I had agreed to leave everything behind for a humanity that was so wasteful. I didn't want to be near the greenhouse. I spent most of my time in the rec room writing angry messages back to ground control.
What did the messages say, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, they were these long speeches about the state of the world. I was writing what I thought at the time were poetic protest messages. I read over them recently, and I realized they sound like the ideas of a madman. Each one got angrier and less focused. The last message I sent was just a list of everything I was angry about, all the way down to the fact that I'd been wearing the same shirt for 8 days.
How did you overcome it?
Well, I ended up going back to the greenhouse. You know, the plants. The plants have been a cure for a lot of us. They connect us to our past, to what we know. I catch a lot of people walking among the rows of crops. The smells, you know, the smell just reminds them of home. Sometimes it can feel like you're living in purgatory here. So it's just so good to have these reminders of life around you.
What you said earlier about not believing the structure being made by some kind of life, do you still believe that?
Yes, definitely. You know, people forget the miraculous things that nature can build. The way these stones are carved so perfectly into each other, why couldn't millions of years of wind and water, not to mention volcanic activity, have helped build that?
I don't know. They've been showing me some pretty believable evidence.
Well, Have you seen the Giant's Causeway in Northern Ireland?
No.
You have to look this up, okay? It's like, it's 40,000 interlocking basalt columns, which is the same stone that makes up a lot of Mars. And they're tightly connected, and they weren't put there by man. They're the result of an ancient volcanic eruption.
But they must have looked into that before colonizing a planet millions and millions of kilometers away.
Yes, of course. But my point is that they still haven't found definitive proof that life existed here. And there are lots of possibilities as to what created that structure. I think it's good to have people like me around.
What do you mean?
Doubters. People that need proof without the shadow of a doubt. And I'm not the only one here. There are even those on the archaeological team that are with me on this.
That surprises me. I would have thought those guys would have come because they wanted to be part of the first team to find evidence of life on Mars.
No, I mean, yeah, some of them came for that reason. Others came because they were skeptical. The ISA wanted a crew with both believers and non-believers. So we challenged each other to be at the top of our game.
That probably led to some pretty intense discussions.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, things can get heated at times. We know the job, part of the job is to make us drill down to the truth and to push each other further. And when things get too crazy, you'll find people walking around the greenhouse to cool down.
It all comes back to the plants.
Yeah, I mean, at least for me. You know, I don't care what anyone else says. I have the best job on this planet.
This is Megan speaking to Doug Freeman from his home in Orange County, California. Doug was one of the waste management specialists on Mars. He talks about one of the common mental challenges that can occur and the dangers of not addressing the issue immediately.
Yeah, I had to leave the HAB often for my job, and it took a long time to learn to work efficiently in a spacesuit. They're so pressurized, you know. It's not easy to grip tools and kneel down. But I liked being outside. It reminded me of home. I've always loved being outdoors.
You know, this is something I'm curious about. Did you like things that reminded you of Earth, or did they make you homesick for the real deal?
I learned to appreciate them very much. I think it's all about perspective. There was a time when anything reminiscent of my life on Earth was painful.
Was this around the time you suffered from menu fatigue?
I guess word gets around. Yeah, not a bright time in my life.
Do you think one triggered the other?
Not really. I don't know. I'd begun missing home about 6 months or so into the trip. This may seem strange, but I really wasn't expecting it. I guess I assumed the excitement of the adventure would fill that void for me. It didn't. It ate away at me instead. I didn't even realize it was happening.
Not at all.
Well, it set in slowly. In hindsight, I can see the differences in me easily, but the first time I noticed then, I had been working alone most of the day and realized that I felt agitated at the idea of going to dinner. Like, I just didn't want to be around anyone. And the thought of eating that same food again? I couldn't. So I just went to my bunk instead. I was lying there thinking about home, and man, it almost hurt. Like physically, there was this tugging in my chest and a big knot in my stomach. Things got worse after that. I had no appetite. I would get my work done some days, but I was sleeping more and more. It didn't take long before I completely stopped eating. I became so lethargic, I couldn't even get out of bed. My bunkmates would bring me food, but the sight and smell of it made me want to puke.
That sounds like it could be really dangerous.
It was. One night, I got out of bed and had this urge to go outside. It was like I was still dreaming. I walked right past my suit toward the airlock. I opened it and reached for the door to go outside, and it never even crossed my mind to shut the airlock first. I could have killed myself and many others.
What stopped you?
I had my hands on the latch when my bunkmate, Peter, grabbed me and wrestled me to the ground. I struggled. His left hook to the jaw finally made me snap out of it. Luckily, his fear of dying outweighed my desire to get outside. I barely remember any of it. When he helped me up, I grabbed onto the wall, but it was no use. Everything went dark and I collapsed. Doctors later told me my heart had weakened considerably. I was in the infirmary for a while. I remember thinking about how much I took for granted on Earth. I mistreated my body a lot, and it would always bounce back. On Mars, it's not like that. It's not as forgiving. It took a long time for me to recover. I also spent a lot of time with the therapist.
Did it help?
Some. My first day going back outside was the game changer, though.
What happened?
I went out to do some work and found myself staring out at the red dirt that stretched out in every direction. The dunes and markings on the terrain where water used to flow. I could see it. I could imagine it, you know? I could see the water rushing in to fill the space between the mounds of dirt and cut a path along the surface. I kept imagining a river lined with trees, watching the leaves fall. I felt that tugging in my chest again. Then I realized what was wrong. What was missing. I wanted to be outside, not stuffed in a suit on some barren wasteland. I needed to be surrounded by nature, breathing fresh air. I went back in immediately and paced in the hallway outside my therapist's office. I was excited because I'd figured it out, but also desperate because now I knew I needed something that I absolutely could not have.
What did she say?
Well, truthfully, just talking about the memories in detail helped so much. It was like finding some of the pieces of me that had scattered off. A couple weeks later, Emily called me into her office and gave me a video taken from my boat on the river at home. I could hear the birds and the waves and the wind. Oh man, I cried. I actually cried.
Did it change your perspective?
Oh, yeah. Like we were saying, I stopped dwelling on missing my old life and started appreciating all the things that reminded me of it. For the most part, it was the really little things. Swiss Army knife in my pocket, my morning coffee, even chores.
I keep hearing about how important chores are to a person's mental health on Mars. Even though they're loathed on Earth, they seem to bring joy to everyone there.
We found comfort in the everyday things. They made us feel connected to our past. If you pulled everyone from the mission, they'd probably tell you that laundry day is the best day. A clean pair of socks can change everything.
You miss it?
I don't think I'll ever feel good about leaving. But like everyone else who got sick, I was in pretty bad shape by that time. So that made leaving a little easier. Well, I guess it just made it more of a necessity than a choice.
Do you wish you could go back?
I mean, Mars has been around for billions of years, just waiting for us. And I was there. I left tread marks in the dirt. But recognizing when you've overstayed your welcome is good advice. I knew when I left that I'd been part of something special, but that I couldn't hold on to it. This is where I'm supposed to be. And truthfully, I would rather be home. I get to be with my friends and my family, go outside of my boat. Pretty amazing how important the everyday bits of our lives become once they're gone.
This is Jenna speaking with Diane Jorgensen from her lab. Diane is one of the chemists on Colony One. Diane talks about a moment she had during her first year that was a great reminder of the everyday dangers on Mars.
Everyone was getting, in my opinion, overconfident. We were relaxing into our routine and not being vigilant enough.
Did you tell the others how you were feeling?
Yeah, I made it known I was afraid we were getting lazy. For a while, I refused to participate during free time. There was so much to do. But eventually, I decided to at least join the game nights, and I was doing very well at our weekly poker games.
Oh. Were you glad that you gave in a little?
Yeah, at the time. But we paid for it. One night after dinner, we were going in rounds, like a regular poker tournament, and eventually I made it to the final table. One of the botanists runs in and tells us that we have to get to the greenhouse to see the sunset. There had been a dust storm for the past couple of days, and it was starting to calm down, but there were still a few of those small little dust devils spinning around against the blue sky. And it just created the most vivid sunset that I had seen since we arrived. We just stared in silence. But then suddenly the alarms are going off and warning lights are flashing red, and we look at each other for a second, not really comprehending what's happening. And so I check the monitor, and it shows that the problem's in the kitchen. So we start racing there, and I can smell the smoke. So we grab as many fire extinguishers along the way as we could. And the smoke is growing thicker the closer that we get, and I'm choking on it, and my eyes are burning, and they're starting to tear, and by the time I get there, the fire had spread to the dry goods.
Was everyone okay?
Yes. Luckily.
What caused the fire?
It was an electrical problem. It can happen. But one of us should have been there, and we could have stopped it. 2 weeks of dry goods had been destroyed, and the air in the kitchen wasn't healthy for us to be breathing anymore. So we had to move everything to the rec room while we cleaned. We had 3 weeks of cold food.
And was there enough? I mean, I know the meals are pretty tightly planned here.
Things had to be adjusted. If you have a fire on Earth, you can replace things. You can buy more food. You can buy a whole new house if you have to. We didn't have an unending supply of anything here. Everything must be rationed. What good is a house over your head without the food to survive on?
Next time on Mars 2060.
I'm not saying I believe that this river wasn't already there in the exact footprint it left. I'm saying you have to look at all possibilities.
At first, the world just kept collapsing more. More dirt just rushed in. It felt like we were getting further and further away from them.
You know, I've heard that nothing brings people together like bonding over a common enemy.